Good morning. Welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Saturday, the 18th of July, 2020. I'm Nick Hurley here in Melbourne. Starting with iron ore, our biggest single export after coal. It has hit $105 a tonne, which is sort of the highest it's been since July last year. So looking promising there. We've also had some reassuring news from Rio Tinto come out yesterday, saying they'd shipped 86.7 million tonnes from Western Australia in the last 3 months, which was up from 85 at the same time last year. And obviously with the price being so high, it does indicate that there is, you know, robust iron ore demand from China, which could indicate we're going back a bit to how it was after the financial crisis with lots of infrastructure stimulus spending. There's also the supply side impact of the Brazilian operations of Vale, which have suffered from the widespread coronavirus infections in Brazil. But it's looking very promising and a healthy input to our economy here. And moving to the coronavirus vaccine, we covered earlier in the week the tremendous progress the US team at Moderna and also the Oxford University team with their vaccines. There's talk that some of those could be ready as early as September, which has had a hugely positive impact on markets. However, looking back in Australia, the federal government's been very strongly behind the University of Queensland molecular clamp vaccine trial. And the Channel 9 news ran on Friday a story that saying that a number of industry insiders have privately expressed concern that the government's too focused on this UQ project and risks missing out on the global opportunities. Because the reality is the vaccine, if we want it in plentiful supply and as soon as possible, will most likely not be coming from our own shores. Now, there's another vaccine in Australia that's been progressing very strongly, and that's the one by a company called Vaxine, V-A-X-I-N-E, and that's doing phase one trials at Royal Adelaide Hospital at the moment. Like the Channel 9 article, the founder of Vaxine, Professor Nikolai Petrovsky, says the government should place as many bets as possible on the hunt for a vaccine. Even him with his company, he's mentioned that he's been in talks with a number of international manufacturers to see that that his vaccine could deliver the number of doses necessary if it is successful. He's worried that some global firms working on treatments may end up over-promising and under-delivering on supply. He says, when everyone wakes up to the fact that in 6 months' time that certain companies can't produce 1 billion doses in 12 months, or even a tenth of this, then there's going to be a lot of countries that are going to find themselves in trouble with no vaccine supplies at all. And I think that's an interesting sort of point to make, particularly when we've seen the Oxford University vaccine partnering with AstraZeneca, which has huge vaccine manufacturing capability. And there's talk that they'll be able to produce 2 billion of these vaccines in the next year with the Oxford vaccine. Now, as I mentioned earlier in the week, there seems to be a sort of an underappreciation in the market to the scenario of there being a vaccine ready sooner and what impact that will have on sort of an upside tail risk event, when a lot of the narrative at the moment's about, oh, you know, the impending debt bubble, the structural unemployment and the shift in the structure of the economy to be much less productive as a result of the virus. But if this is only going to be another few months, then maybe there's a lot of mispricing in projections going forward. Interestingly, Goldman Sachs mentioned that they believe that there is an underappreciation in the market of the potential of this. So Salveen Richter said it's underappreciated that there's going to be a 30,000 patient trial, the phase three of the Moderna trial, starting on the 27th of this month. He says that the chances of success of at least one vaccine being successful this year is enhanced further by four other vaccine programs slated to enter the final research phase of testing sometime in this northern summer. Those experimental vaccines expected to start large-scale testing are from Pfizer in partnership with BioNTech SE, then the AstraZeneca with the University of Oxford, then the Inovio Pharmaceuticals, and then the Chinese Sinovac Biotech Limited. And interestingly, in news this morning, there's reports that the European Union is negotiating advanced deals with vaccines with companies including Moderna, Sanofi, Johnson & Johnson, BioNTech, and CureVac. This is on Reuters. The talks are most advanced with Johnson & Johnson and Sanofi. Moderna shares have jumped again by 3% pre-market, and BioNTech American Depository Receipts rose 2.8%. So we really have not seen much media coverage of what the Australian government is doing, and certainly nothing substantive about how we're being positioned. If there's going to be a vaccine ready to go as early as September, will we see any of it? We've already missed out on Gilead's remdesivir's first month of production as a result of the US sort of taking the whole supply. So it will be a concern if we're sort of left without anything with something as valuable as a mass-produced vaccine. Okay, moving to investment strategy now. There was a paper in the April 2020 issue of the Journal of Investing looking at momentum and reversal in terms of factor investing. So momentum, for those who aren't sort of up with factor investing, that's basically the phenomenon of stocks that go up tend to keep going up. So quite a sort of simplistic thing there. And reversal is where they typically, after a stock's had a really strong run, they tend to show a reversal. So they'll sort of go back in the other way. And that can be either, you know, a negative momentum followed by a reversal, or a positive price rise followed by, you know, a negative reversal. So they did an analysis across a number of industries and countries, and they found they were looking at whether combining momentum and reversal together was more produces more alpha than each of those sort of sub factors on their own. So why does momentum occur? So typically they explain that there's initially an underreaction that creates a trend. And then there's a subsequent overreaction that leads to the eventual return reversal. So a trend usually starts with some catalyst, such as negative earnings release or some positive macroeconomic news, to which investors underreact due to several most likely behavioral mechanisms. Some investors anchor their views to historical prices and insufficiently adjust them to new information. Once a trend is in place, some investors may decide to jump on the bandwagon because of feedback trading or herding mentality, and the effect may be augmented by the similar behavior of analysts, like we're probably seeing with Afterpay and some of the buy now pay later names. And then there's also the behavioral impacts of confirmation bias and representativeness. So they basically found that combining momentum and reversal produces a superior return predictive signal, outperforming individual momentum and reversal strategies. So they had a look, and the alpha they were able to find was 1.44% for the model they used, with a Sharpe ratio of 1.26, which is obviously very strong. The findings were robust to many considerations, including asset pricing models, value, weighted and equal weighted portfolios, and different sub periods of time, and also across different markets, like country sizes and sectors, industry sectors. It was also a profitable after conservatively accounting for trading costs. So that's something, an interesting sort of strategy there that maybe could be pursued by those looking to systematically create some alpha in their portfolio. Okay, moving to the markets for the final day of the trading week in the US, we're seeing a bit of underperformance of the large cap tech names, with Nasdaq leading the decline this morning, down 46 basis points, versus, say, the Russell, which is only down 17 basis points. We saw that Netflix surprised investors with a disappointing subscriber outlook, suggesting that maybe the tech run may be, running out of steam. And that is your early finance briefing for Saturday, the 18th of July. Have a great weekend.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.